It's a fucking lockdown. Mass hysteria. Mass hysteria.
We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it.
But don't let me touch you.
Wash my hands, I don't touch my face, I stay at home, shelter in place, social distance, don't go to work, I wear a mask and gloves, stay away from church. I avoid old folks, and should I sneeze, I do it in my elbow or up my sleeve. 6 feet apart, that is the rule, and I pray for the day the kids can go back to school.
Sing it, Ray Stevens. That's right. I'm sure nobody listening to this knows who Ray Stevens is. I actually had to look him up. He's an old Nashville country western singer.
Oh, so he's somebody.
Yeah, he's somebody. He's not just somebody's grampy singing here on this YouTube clip I found. This is Ray Stevens quarantined, obviously sticking with the trend of all our COVID-19 songs that we typically start the show with.
I love that he's got a mask around his neck and he's wearing surgical gloves. Good for him.
Yeah, he really is. I'll say, out of all of the performances that we've played at the beginning of every show, this guy is literally following the steps. I mean, he is PPE'd up the wazoo.
Sort of. I wish he was wearing the mask. Of course, that would make his
muffle
voice
his
sound
voice.
Different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, go for it. Let's hear it all. All of its dirty-ass glory.
With that said, welcome to the show, everybody. We are back. We haven't done a show in about 2 weeks. We took a little time off. It was actually funny. Catherine and I were talking about kind of like, how can we continue to keep this show going, keep this kind of relevant? Obviously, we had been, at that point, doing it for 11 episodes. And, you know, hey, wouldn't you know, COVID is making a comeback, baby.
Surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Like, any of us are really surprised. Yeah, that's kind of been the word on the street nowadays. For those of you keeping tally, we're over 121,000 deaths in the United States and over 2,341,000 cases in the United States. And as of very recent, we've had some cases spiking in states all across the country, like Florida, Texas, and Arizona, just to name a few.
And Georgia, where we live, just had broke its own record for the most in a day recently.
Oh, we did. I didn't even see that
news. You told me that. And I saw it too, but you told me.
You know, I heard about it, but I didn't hear the actual data or the numbers of it.
I don't think it was deaths. I think it was cases, positive cases in a day.
Okay, well, regardless, it's not necessarily good news.
No.
I guess it's something everybody had been expecting. There was all this talk for the longest time about, oh, we're gonna hit a second wave eventually. There's also been speculation that we never left the first wave. And
I stand to say I agree with that second point. I think this is not the second wave. We are still riding the first one.
We're riding it. Well, we are riding it, and it is riding upward.
Well, yeah, because what distinguishes the second wave is when cases go down to very low, and you might think it's over, and then there's a second wave. We have never in this country felt like, hey, we're getting there.
Yeah, that's true, especially in the fact that when it even comes to the death toll daily here ever since probably early April, I don't think that we have seen the death toll really tip below the hundreds.
Well, right. I mean, yesterday seemed kind of low. I think it was 300-something, 400-something.
Right.
But then today, we're back up to 600-something. I think it's hovered around 800 for a little while. I know, you know, when it was really bad, when we were talking on this show, it was over 1,200 every day.
Yes.
But that little dip, I don't think, is doesn't qualify the end of a wave.
No, it's definitely not the end of it. And so I guess that's just not the end of our show.
I guess we're going to be at this for a year, guys.
We may be doing this for many more episodes. And as we always do on every show, we got to tell you where we're at. We are at episode 12. Today's date is June 23rd, 2020. And this is day 103 of quarantine for us.
Wow.
We broke 100 days of quarantine.
Are you sure it's not 1,003?
I mean, on paper, it says... to me, 103, in my mind, it says 5 years.
Yeah. Well, not that long.
That's what
a
it
long
feels
fucking
like.
Time.
It feels like an eternity has passed us by here. And, you know, obviously, it's frustrating to see how all these other countries have seemed to find kind of a plateau or kind of a regression of the uptick in cases. But here we are. Just going big like we do in the United States. It's a little discouraging to see a lot of states really not following any kinds of protocols when it comes to masks or social distancing.
Especially
these states that are having these kind of big upticks in cases. It's been really hard to watch the news and see what's going down in Florida. I have a lot of friends. We have family in Florida. It's kind of a scary situation there right now.
Yeah, that's true. As bad as it is here, Florida's definitely getting it worse. And I saw even something today about Utah.
Yeah, I saw Utah as well. I don't know. And again, we've talked on the show at quite great lengths on our feelings of kind of just abiding by, you know, wearing PPE when you're out in public. This whole mask thing has become very silly and political in this day and age, especially when our stupid-ass president is actually saying that it's a political statement to wear a mask. We've seen in the news, obviously, with his whole shit show recently in Tulsa. It's a very hard time for a pandemic to hit this country, too, because we're just so polarized politically, and just everybody is so separated.
Yeah, I mean, boy, You've entered a whole political discussion about the state of this nation, which I don't think I'm prepared for right now. But yeah, we're in a weird spot.
We are in a weird spot. And I don't know. It's just crazy to me when you do look at I try not to get too obsessed with the news. I try to, again, read it maybe twice a day at depth. And just seeing pictures of people out in public, you know, literally in bars, just packed in there, crowded with no masks on.
We've been talking about this. Nothing's changed. It's like, you know, for weeks now we've been saying this. So it's almost like, you know, I'll mention it if there's a fucking change, but that I don't see there being one. I don't see people just all of a sudden jumping on board. So it's going to be like this. This is what it is now.
Yeah, I do think it is kind of what we're looking down the road at, is we're looking at a world where we've kind of just said to ourselves as a country, like, hey, people are going to die. A lot of people probably are going to die by the end of this. We're going to open up the economy. We're ramping forward with that. Either you choose to protect yourself, you choose to abide by those safety protocols and think about the greater good, or you don't. And that's going to be the difference. And there's going to be places that are going to require you to wear masks. And there's going to be places that you're free to do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, I mean, I choose to wear it. I mean, we even had pest control come for the first time in 3 months, and he was wearing a mask, and we put our masks on even though we were in our home, you know, and we all stayed away from each other, and
you didn't
think it
high-five
was the best
him
thing
at the end?
To do. I gave him a full mouth kiss. It was great.
Thank you for getting rid of these roaches.
That makes our house sound gross. We have had some, though.
We live in a basement apartment, people, okay?
Well, that also sounds pretty gross, too. It's basement on one side and outdoors on the other. We live in a hill,
yeah.
So anyway.
It's a nice place, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and
so it's,
when we go
I
out, we do
it comes
do
to personal
it the safety
choice.
Stuff.
It comes to personal choice. For me, the choice is to try to protect others, and that's really what it is. We watch Schitt's Creek, and the creator of that, one of the creators of that, is it Daniel Levy?
I think it's Daniel Levy. Yeah, Levy.
Yeah, because his name in the show is David. His real name is Daniel. Okay, so Daniel Levy said something to the effect of weeks ago now that it was the easiest act of kindness you could do in a day, and that's how I feel about it. It's an act of kindness towards other people, and it's one I certainly don't mind doing, and I wish other people would do it too, and all I can do is live by example.
That's right. That's right. So I guess that's what we're trying to do on this show is live by any kind of example. But I mean, you do what you want to do. Just don't come near me with your big, open, gaping mouth.
No, thank you.
No, thanks. So we are doing things differently on the show. The last episode, we changed things up and we started doing phone interviews with friends and family of ours all around the country. Talking to those people about what they've been doing during quarantine and during this whole COVID-19 fiasco. Today on the show, we have a new guest we're going to go to in just a moment. My friend Danya, actually our friend Danya, she's really great. Met her years ago when we were doing Art Attacks and have always stayed in contact with her. She lives in Queens, New York, basically right outside of New York City, has worked in the city and has been up there in the kind of epicenter of New York during this whole pandemic. And I got to chat with her, which was really nice. She gave, you know, me about 30 minutes of her time. We talked on the phone and we had a really great interview. I'm really excited to share that.
Yeah, I'm super interested to hear what somebody right there in the middle of the action has to say. It seems she's in such a different situation from where we are. And, you know, even like things like exercising, I think, you know, where we are getting out and taking a walk is so easy. And I think it is probably for a lot of the people we know in Florida as well. So it's just so different living in a really packed big city. I'm super intrigued.
Yeah, and we definitely go into detail about that. Danya is an artist and she talks to me a lot about kind of her creative routine as she's been in quarantine. And we get into a lot of topics. Again, I'm excited to talk to her. But yeah, we'll go to that right now, to me talking to Danya up in New York. So let's go to that and we'll be back after that interview.
Your call is important to us.
How you doing?
Okay. How are you doing?
I don't know. Survive it in this weird world.
That's pretty much like all we can do right now is somehow like make it to the next day, because really it's one day at a time for real. At least here it is, but we can talk more about that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have a cousin that lives in Jersey City, so I like talk to him, not a lot. I'll talk to him maybe once a month, so I kind of get the lowdown from him. But like, what's it like there now? Like, it seems like you guys are moving into I heard a phase two or something.
Yeah, so I guess that's good news. We're in phase one right now, which to me doesn't seem too much different. Like, I think it's probably positive or something different for a lot of other people, maybe people with like office jobs and stuff like that, because
right,
certain office jobs can go back to work now with like, you know, all these, again, all with like social distancing rules in place.
Right, right.
Yeah, and like state workers can go back to work, and like some very basic things. Retail can open, but they're only like curbside shopping or pickup only.
Oh, okay.
Like non-essential, like, you know, like a normal clothing store or like a gift shop can be open, but they're supposed to just on the sidewalk or through the door.
Wow.
Which is kind of what the restaurants have been doing this entire time.
Right, right.
Probably one of the better things about all that was, so right when this all happened, obviously all the restaurants had to close and couldn't do any service.
Oh, man.
But they allowed takeout and like pickup. But part of it all, to like ease it up, the governor like essentially waived all liquor licenses. So you can like have alcohol to go now, or pick up, or as my neighborhood's been doing it, walking on the street and drinking and having a stroll.
It's the least they can do, right?
I mean, especially now the weather's better, you know, everyone's just like, oh, wow, like, look, these adults are somewhat behaving themselves.
Do they have to put it in like a cup or something, but they can just have like glass containers and stuff?
No. I mean, it's all to-go cups.
To-go. Like, it's, gotcha.
Yeah. The mayor has a thing that's take out, don't hang out. But I'm going to let you know that at least from my perspective, I don't know how well that's being enforced.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm sure we're in two different worlds. I mean, I'm in quote unquote the South down here. So, you know, we were super quick to open up. I mean, God, I think Atlanta's been opened up now for like a month. And
how long were you closed?
Well, I want to say like Catherine and I kind of battened down the hatches when I feel like Trump, he did like the national emergency announcement, which was what, like shit, like April something or maybe late March.
No, that was in, it was in early March because that was technically the week before we shut down.
Okay, yeah. And it was like, we went pretty quickly after that. You know, they kind of did everything shutting down. And it just, it was like a ripple effect here. So it was like a couple of days. And then by like the next week after his announcement, everything here was in complete shutdown mode. Okay. Same with you guys?
Kind of like that. So like there was I remember like the date. Yeah, it was like the Wednesday before was Trump's like announcement.
Right.
But we had already had a conversation like the day before at the gallery about like, should we be working from home? What should we do? Like, how do we want to go about this?
Right.
And then we were already working from home by that Friday.
Okay.
And then essentially that same Friday was when Cuomo said that like starting Monday.
Wow.
Like everything was going, you know, everything was locking down.
Okay.
So it was pretty quick after.
Yeah. He didn't really waste much time. I mean, it's again, the whole two worlds thing. It's like how your governor has handled stuff and then like how Brian Kemp has handled stuff are completely different worlds night and day. I think you're lucky to have a guy like Cuomo up there. What are your thoughts on him? I mean, were you a Cuomo fan before?
Or I mean,
like, I know he doesn't have a lot of fans.
No, he's perfect.
But...
and I know his politics are like here and there. Right. I can agree with him for the most part, but like the politics and stuff aside, and that's the one thing I'm really glad that he's been doing is that like trying his very best to keep that kind of stuff out of it.
Yeah.
Because no matter what anyone says about all of his other mistakes, is like this specific situation, I believe he handled as well as he could.
Oh yeah. I feel like he's like the poster boy for what governors should have done and how he handled everything, kind of not drawing political lines. And it, and you know, honestly, you guys have something to show for it. I mean, when I last checked, you guys probably out of most of the states in the country have pretty much knocked your curve down, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Significantly.
We only had 17 deaths yesterday, which is still 17 too many, but
so crazy.
In comparison to even that first week, like it's, you know, we were in triple and like, you know, quadruple digits some days.
That's, do you not find it strange that here we are all like kind of just nilly willy talking about death? It seems to be just this vernacular that's an everyday thing now that we've almost become desensitized to the fact that it's just okay that several hundred people die a day in this country.
I mean, it's not okay, but I think that's just also how it is. It's how it's taken in different places. You know? It was hard being in New York and then seeing so many people online or like abroad or wherever making, you know, all kinds of assumptions about what was going on and all the conspiracy theories.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
that's
you know,
true.
It's like, I'm physically here. I'm physically seeing it. And I know people who've gotten sick. I know, you know, like luckily no one is in my inner circle, but right outside, like we've lost people, you know,
I'm sorry.
Like friends, parents, like, my, you know, friends, teachers, all kinds of stuff. So it's not a joke.
No, it's definitely not a joke. And I mean, New York especially was kind of this epicenter when it all started. And it's like, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, you're in Queens, so I mean, you're very close to the action. And actually, one of those hospitals was actually right near you, right? Like one of the ones that was in the news.
Elmhurst Hospital is the state hospital, and it's it is very close to me. It is actually when I had my appendix burst in surgery a couple years ago. That's the hospital I went to.
Oh, wow.
Like, I mean, it's not the closest hospital to me, but it's like the one state one, which is also why it has the most numbers, because it being a state hospital means like lower income people would go to that one to find financial support.
Crazy.
So that's another reason why the numbers there were probably a little bit like larger in comparison to others, or at least why that became like a big epicenter.
Definitely. Definitely. You were seeing their system get stressed out, and it was kind of an implementation of like what was to come for other states. It was very scary. And I mean, obviously to this day, my heart goes out to like healthcare workers. Like I can't even fathom it really. You know, what you have to go to work with and deal with every single day.
it was, you know, it was really strange, and it is really real. You know, here, let's go back here and, like, I'll go just real frank.
Sure.
I had never been formally diagnosed, but I was sick in March.
Interesting.
And I took the antibody test a couple weeks ago, okay. And it came back with antibodies detected.
Really?
So that
wow,
it says that I had it.
Wow. Now back in March, yeah. Like, what were you, like, how did you feel when you were sick? Did you even think twice about, like, man, this is even like a, this was worse than a regular cold? Did it, like, have any, like,
well,
barometer like that?
But I noticed, because my roommate Sophia also was sick just like
wow.
the week before me, but it was not as, it was on this line where we weren't quite sure what it was or not. So in my case, the symptoms was like, I just one day I wasn't feeling like so great.
Yeah.
You know, just all of a sudden, like, my body was just kind of like really lethargic and kind of meh. And a little bit of that, like, feeling of a cold, but not anything
sure.
crazy at the time. But then it just kind of got worse, and I had a fever, but it never broke 100 degrees.
Oh, that's great. Because, I mean,
like,
I hear that's
the worst.
I was
always around, like, 99 or 100, like, even. Maybe 100.7 at the max.
That's high, though. That's a pretty high fever.
It is
fever.
High, but it,
yeah.
like, for example, even my roommate and other people, like, my roommate got to 103.
Ooh.
And, you know, had different symptoms than me. She had the cough.
Yeah.
I never really had cough except for kind of like in the morning when I woke up for a couple days.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
like a little, you know, hacky. But because I wasn't really, you know, I would have some kind of breathing issues, but nothing that, like, I was all told that, you know, you wouldn't be able to breathe and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's just more my anxiety or, you know, can I actually not breathe? You know, it was on this weird question.
Exactly.
I definitely lost
Damn.
My sense of smell.
Wow, that's crazy. And
yeah.
And did you take this antibody test just, like, recently somewhere locally, just some, like, clinic or something?
So they started doing antibody tests at, like CityMDs and, like, urgent cares, but there was all these things that, like, none of these were really approved, and a lot of them were coming back with false positives and all these things.
Oh, that's right.
So I was
yeah.
really hesitant about going to any of those. And then maybe, what, a few weeks ago, the mayor set up 5 locations, so one in each borough, that were, like, New York City kind of approved. Obviously, nothing's 100%, but it's ones that they feel pretty strong have, like, dependable results.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my roommate and I went there.
Good.
And it was just at a location in Long Island City, so not far. We just went in, they took some blood, and then a few days later, I got, you know, the results were on the website.
Interesting. So you, in your experience doing the antibody test, it was a quick turnaround? Like, you didn't wait, like, longer than a week to get the results?
Oh, no, not for the antibodies. It's just
wow.
a blood test, essentially.
Yeah, because I know there's the antibody test, and then the actual other test is where they just jam that giant cotton swab.
Yeah,
in your
I never got to experience that.
Oh, my God.
I did do the urgent, or, like, the virtual doctor thing at the time,
oh.
but it wasn't because of my symptoms. At the end of the, because that only lasted maybe a little less than a week, was I having those kind of, like, not so great, but
right.
not anything that I was so worried about
okay.
yet, or, like, that I felt the need to go to a hospital.
Interesting.
It was near me getting better. I broke out in hives,
huh.
which I had never had in my life, and I didn't know what it was at the time and all this kind of stuff. And I was really concerned, because even when I took some, like, allergy medicine for it, I felt like I was having a panic attack. It was not fun.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So
yeah, that's uncomfortable.
When I called the doctor, and at the time, they were just, like, brushing it off. But it wasn't until very recently did they find out that rashes and hives are a symptom.
Yes, I read about that. You're right. It's definitely,
so
it's correlated.
Late March, when I had the symptoms, like, they didn't think it was that. So, like, they just were like, no, just, you know, take some Allegra. You'll be fine.
Jeez. That's so,
and so
wild.
Like, you know, to their credit, they didn't know at the time, but
yeah.
that's just it. It's so new. Even now, no one really knows.
So, like, okay, so you get the test. Now you, like, they say you have the antibodies. So, like, mm-hmm. now, does that make you feel any safer or make you feel better about going out in public? Like, do you feel, I'm not going to say invincible, but do you feel a little more protected because you know that?
I do. It's here and there. So, I did actually get to go see my primary care literally this week.
Cool.
And I had my physical scheduled for the first day that we were supposed to go into quarantine.
Oh, man.
And so obviously that got canceled. Yeah. It got pushed. And then somehow I magically had it scheduled for the first day they let phase one open. So right. I was like, wow, okay, they worked out. But I asked her about that. And, you know, it's pretty much what I assumed. They pretty much said that, like, yes, it is very possible that you're immune, but because they're still learning, they don't know for how long.
Yeah, that is true.
So it's like, am I just going to be immune for like the summer, this year, for my life, for like
yeah, exactly.
until the next go round?
It's like, a gray area still. Mm-hmm.
So I am a little like not so neurotic as we were in the beginning, despite the fact that we apparently had already had it before this even started. But... you know, but I still, you know, I have to wear my mask. I'm still cautious. I still wash my hands like okay. all the time. You know, I'm just not nearly as like, get away from me.
Right, right. So I'm sure, you know, like, so when it started, and obviously, you know, you guys live in an apartment, like, I'm sure, you know, you had to venture out. When it started, did you, like, was there a lot of feelings of unease, and did you not feel safe? And was it kind of like, did you kind of freak out when you had to go out and about?
No, so my roommate and I were talking about this, about how it's like, wow, I remember, like, kind of as this all was going.
Right.
So we were really, so my roommate, Sophia Boga, she's an artist as well. You obviously know her.
Oh, yeah.
Her mother is a nurse in a hospital in DC.
Oh.
And so she had actually been talking to us about this for like since beginning of February, late January.
Wow.
And you know, we were kind of like watching it, and I was saying, and then we even talked about it. I was like, well, you know, would you be wearing, you know, when would you wear a mask? I'm like, when it comes to the East Coast.
Okay.
At the time it was only in like Washington and
that's
maybe
true.
I think a couple in California.
Yeah, Washington's where it like really started on fire at first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're finding out now that it might have actually started here.
Whoa.
But like no one knew at the time, because even then it's like we definitely think that it went through, but it was just the first test was over there.
Whoa.
I mean, I can't.
That's wild.
You know, but we had we were at the gallery. And this was like kind of right when, I think this was right after it, like they announced that there was one in Boston.
Okay.
And then I think that they were talking about how they'd like found that one girl, that first like woman, not the one that started all the guy who started all that stuff in, I forget, upstate.
Okay.
But so it was like, okay, we had kind of bandanas, not like real masks yet.
Right.
But that night we had come home from the gallery and like, that's the most grocery shopping I've ever done, like, in the last, like, probably five, six, 7 years.
Just mass hysteria. Just grabbing everything.
I mean, it's just, we didn't know what they were going to do. And
we did
shut
the
down
same
and
thing.
And they were preparing.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm Floridian, so it's just, like, all I know what to prepare for is a hurricane.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm preparing for a hurricane.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but we did say, like, the first 3 weeks... we did not leave the house except for like strolls a little bit, or if we like needed one specific thing at the store or
gotcha.
Whatever. But even then we didn't need to, because we pretty much had stocked ourselves up.
So you prepared in the beginning and you were able to kind of stretch that for a little while.
Yeah. Until the next time that Cuomo was like, okay, we're going for another 3 weeks. Cause he was doing it every, like about 2 to 3 weeks at a time.
Yeah, he was.
Until it was like mid-April and we realized we were in this for a while.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay, asking, you guys live in an apartment. Obviously,
yes.
You live in an apartment in New York, which obviously
yes.
is not the most spacious place, obviously, right?
I mean, I think we're lucky with the apartment that we are in.
Okay.
It's definitely obviously could be more ideal.
Right.
But I think in comparison to like the average, even like Manhattan,
oh man,
apartment, we have some space,
wiggle room basically. Yeah.
Yeah, like luckily Sophia and I are best friends and we get along, and we
yeah you guys
have
a good relationship
and understand each other, so that does definitely help.
Yeah.
You definitely can get a little like cabin feverish, but I've definitely heard of stories of other New Yorkers and other friends and stuff just having this perception, because a lot of people are willing to pay for the closet,
right?
Because they live in New York City.
Right. They're stacked, you know, miles high, and obviously rent is through the roof. So there's that, there's kind of that stereotypical idea. You guys are a little on the crest of things, and you guys, Queens is obviously a place that I think people, it's not treated like a typical Manhattan neighborhood. It's just like, no, even when I visited you, it was very different.
The river's right there.
Exactly. So that's nice. What have you guys like been doing to keep sane staying in the apartment and quarantined?
I mean, it was hard. Definitely, you have to do the walks. Like, you have to go outside.
Right.
You don't realize how much, like, even for someone like me who obviously doesn't exercise as much as I should, how much just general movement and energy and exercise you were going just through a normal day.
Exactly.
Like, going up and down the stairs of the train, going, like, walking, power walking through Manhattan all the time, you know, just... like the basic, just going around the gallery and stuff like that was, I'm like, oh, I'm sitting here on my desk and then I'm moving to my bed.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, especially living there. It's such a get up and go mentality. It's all mass transit. I mean, yeah, I can't imagine the amount of steps you must have clocked in just an average week of going back and forth from work and just living in a city environment. So yeah, I mean, a couple of weeks of just, like you said, like baby steps around, I'm sure it felt really good to just go and like break free and walk down the block.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And it's been fun though, because Zofia's lived here for a very long time.
Okay.
But it's like now has been the one time that we've seen the neighborhood the most.
Cool, cool.
Because like, this is the silver lining is, you know, go on these walks and you're just literally walking through the neighborhood down streets you might not normally go, because
yeah,
it's just like, I don't know what's over here, let's go look.
It is true. It kind of brings out this explorer's heart in everybody. And I think too, you know, we try to do the same thing since quarantine started. We try to walk every day, and especially the dog gets really pent up, so you take her for a walk and it's like, I've even noticed out on walks I look at nature differently. I'm like,
know,
oh, look
so
at that
nice,
look at that
since...
bird, look at that caterpillar, you know. Just like I'm like laser
here,
focused.
We like missed spring kind of altogether because
right,
it was like I was in a big heavy coat like the first day of quarantine, and
oh
then
sure
now,
yeah,
here we are in the summer and I'm like wearing like short shorts and tank tops and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, when did this happen?
Yeah, that's wild. That whole like little chunk of season passed you guys by while you were all cooped up.
Yeah, we had spring for a brief moment. That was it.
That's crazy. Well, obviously, too, you and Zofia are both artists.
Mm-hmm.
A question I had is like, being an artist, being in quarantine, being cooped up, like when it comes to like motivation and creativity, like, does it feel like work, or has it been a fruitful experience and enjoyable, or does it feel forced? Like, what are you running into with that? Because I know you're a very active artist, and I love watching you always working and you're creating stuff. So like, how has that treated you in this like stretch of time?
It's been up and down. So in the beginning, it was just really great because I worked a lot at my job, at my, you know, the day job at the gallery. And it was just kind of like, oh my gosh, this is all I ever wanted, to stay home and like work on my art and do all these things for me. So the first few weeks are really good. And then I got sick for like a week and a half, and that was like time to kind of recover. And then, you know, I was doing it again, but it all kind of goes in waves.
Sure.
So I know that it's something different about what's happening. And I've spoken to other artists about this as well. Even ones who were already working from home on the regular or like full-time artists.
Right.
They are, I know, it's like this collective mindset of like this little bit of fog in our heads.
Okay.
And it's definitely been like people's creativity, even like, you know, full on rock star kind of artists, plus like, you know, like the, you know, up emerging artists and such like that. It seems to be a little bit more, either they're forced or the inspiration's not hitting them or something's not quite right.
Sure.
So I feel like it's a mix of things, and something I've definitely been trying to push out there, even to myself, is just like, it's okay. Everyone's kind of going through the same thing. So there's nothing we can really do about it except
totally,
for like try to make the best of it. Like, don't be so hard on ourselves for not being as productive. Like, I've been in a really bad fog for the last couple of weeks. I haven't made like anything since like June started, pretty much. But, you know, it's okay. You come back. It's just like a normal block or whatever. You just have to go through phases. So it's been really good. But then there's also days where it's just like, can't focus on anything. I'm just going to sit here and play Animal Crossing and
right,
just be over it.
Right. it ebbs and flows. And I think, yeah. You know, when you're a creative person, you know, obviously when you have a job and a life, like you find those little times on the side or after mm-hmm. your job's over at night, whenever you can kind of chisel in that creative time. What this whole quarantine thing has done is it's given us an incredible stretch of time. And I feel with myself, it's been probably the opposite. Is like, I don't feel like, maybe the last 2 weeks I've had this kind of like surge of like, man, this feels kind of good to sit down and stretch the creative muscles and do things, where when it started, I was just very stagnant and I kept really wanting to like stick to some, I guess, routine that I already had in my life. And yeah. it made me feel like I still had an assimilation of my life. And that made me feel good about things. But I'll be honest with you, started June, that has now kind of completely faded away. I could care less. And yeah, there are totally days where I say, fuck it, chalking this one up. I kind of don't give a shit. I'm going to give myself a pass. That's it.
You have to, though. You have to, like, not be so hard on yourself. You have to give yourself the days. Like, obviously, when you're going to go into, like, big long streaks of it, you know, here and there. But I was pretty much opposite of like that. Like, as soon as we were out of, you know, into quarantine, I was like creating something every day. I was doodling. I was like working on stuff. But also then I was still awesome. Kind of doing the gallery thing. And then that's kind of also what like disturbed a lot of stuff, is like I was going through a flow and then, you know, things started to get real here. And
right.
So that was like another week and a half of like just mental and physical and emotional stress.
Yeah.
There. And then it was like recovering from that and then having another spurt of like trying to be like, okay, now I have to be my own boss and giving myself structure and then going back into another wave of down.
It's totally what that is. And, you mm-hmm. know, it's like when you're working for a living and then, you know, I'm going through a similar thing. I mean, I've been furloughed. This is my second month being furloughed from my job. There's not mm-hmm. necessarily a open-handed invite to come back to my job. I'm waiting with bated breath to see what this whole the film and TV industry actually does, if it's successful. Yeah. So do you want to talk about your job? Do you mind talking about it?
Ask me about it. I'll just not respond to it, or I'll tell you I can't talk about something.
Yeah, I mean, basically
I don't work there anymore. I'll just say that.
Okay. And I mean, you did work at a gallery in New York City, and mm-hmm. I'm sure that was a very tough decision for the owner to make with the times. And how long did it take after everybody went into quarantine for that decision to come down the lines? Did you expect it? Were you surprised by it?
I'll be real frank. I definitely saw that it was going to be like a very good chance of happening.
Okay.
Just because of how things were before and then just the realities of it. Let's just, you know, Manhattan rents are outrageous.
Yeah.
And you saw that gallery.
Yeah.
It was huge for even Manhattan.
Big spot.
Gallery
big
standards.
Space. Yes, was.
But the space also held multiple businesses in it.
Okay.
Aside from the gallery, it had a tattoo studio.
Right.
And I'm going to let you know, artists and tattoo and then even galleries are at the very bottom of the essential workers list.
That is true.
So when you are eliminating pretty much 100% of one business and then attempting to think that the other business can like run itself only online when the structure wasn't really there to begin with.
Correct.
While still paying like an outrageous price that
overhead.
I'm not going to say,
I know.
But
an
outrageous rent for literally an unused space. You know, it's smart, and I'm not, yeah. I've seen other businesses do this, both tattoo studios and art galleries, make the decision to forfeit their space and then hopefully open again, or, you know, see what happens with this, because no matter what happens, places like tattoo studios are not going to open back up anytime soon with what's happening here. Like, I think that places like gyms, salons, and like studios like that aren't until like phase three.
Okay.
And I, you know, but there's still no sign of when that might be.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you guys are literally approaching phase two right now, right?
And even that, I'm amazed it happened so quickly, to be honest. We were only in phase one for like, what, this like week, 2 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's, I'm sure, like you said, it's just, it becomes a hard decision, but it does become a realistic decision that has to be made, where you can't predict what's going to happen in a day, in a week, and at this point, let alone a month or the rest of the year. So it probably was a tough call to make, but I just think that not even in just the art world, there were so many kinds of industries, mom and pop shops, that just had to say, like, we just need to ride this thing out, you know? And it's kind of like, there's no real good answer right now. And do you see this having a ripple effect into next year? Like, do you see, I guess my question is, like, how do you see the art world maybe pivoting from this in the future? Like, granted, the gallery life may be able to slowly start to come back to normal with possible social distancing and people wearing masks and possibly watching occupancy. But I mean, what do you think the fate of that is in the coming year?
Well, I think it's already happening in a lot of places. I am lucky to have been helping out with Gristle Art and Tattoo in Brooklyn. Cool. Awesome. They're kind of having a similar thing. But obviously their tattoo is closed, but the gallery, I helped make them go completely online.
Oh, that's
so
great.
In the instant, we essentially were just like, well, this show is going to have to be on the internet only, because even the owner has just said, we're never, like, even if they let us open, I don't feel comfortable doing openings for the rest of 2020 at least.
Okay.
So, you know, right now we've had to do this pivoting to being online only, and I've seen a lot of galleries do the same thing.
Okay.
Which isn't unsurprising, because in most galleries' cases nowadays, I believe, at least in the gallery I was working in, at least like 85% of our sales come from online.
Really?
We have New York buyers or local,
yeah,
you know, collectors, and some collectors who, you know, come in, but it's like they're going to buy something anyways, but they just like to come and see.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
Majority of the sales happen through an email. A lot of people who buy art don't ever see the artwork in person ever.
That's crazy.
And I don't think a lot of people realize that.
No, I don't think they do. And
I mean, yeah.
Wow. And I mean, obviously this is pretty high ticket price art, especially the gallery that you recently worked for. I mean, when I came in that place, I was pretty slack jawed at the red dots on the, you know, showing that these places had sold.
Yeah, because in a place like where I was working before with Last Rites, I'll say where it is, it doesn't matter. When I was working for Last Rites and Booth Gallery, the price ranges can be there, like, literally as low as, like, $500,000, but upwards of, like, you know, $90,000 or something like that, depending on the piece or whatever. And then we used to have things even more when we had Nerdrum and stuff. But I think that's also what's changed a bit. I don't know how high ticket items are doing anymore.
Oh.
I think the success, for example, of me moving Gristle, which is the other gallery, to online.
Yeah.
Gristle already focuses on emerging artists and
that's awesome.
Kind of like approachable price points.
Yeah.
So like majority that's of the nice. Work doesn't even break $1,000 there.
I love that. I think that's such a great movement in art, you know, something that like to start a person's collection up, you know, to maybe move into those big ticket items eventually. But I think everybody has to start somewhere in the collective mentality.
And especially now everyone is doing nothing but sitting in their like houses. You need something pretty on your walls. Like,
no kidding.
You know, and you're supporting, you know, a creator. So it's something.
That's really cool. And I think, you know, like art in general, in my opinion, like I think like, as a movement and as like what galleries I think do a lot of or did a lot of is like they create a social atmosphere when they open up a show. So it's all about showing up. It's all about kind of the schmoozing and the talking and the event that is brought by it. But yeah, you're right. The interesting change and pivot could be it's just truly about showcasing the work. Maybe it's solely online. My question is, like, what truly is the fate of, like, these huge art festivals? Like, will Basel ever be a thing again?
I think it will, but not anytime soon.
Interesting.
I mean, Basel Switzerland already canceled.
Really? I didn't know that. Wow.
I think they were supposed to be next month. I forget. They're in the summer usually.
Yeah.
But they've already canceled, and I'm expecting Miami to be the same. I highly doubt, even if Florida has, like, all their stuff safe, to get the income there, you know, the kind of people who would be coming in and flying at all, like that's even that, just travel alone.
I know.
But I think that things like openings and fairs and stuff like that are still very important and are still going to be needed.
I think so.
Because like you said, yeah, of course it's artwork. seeing artwork in person can never be replaced by seeing it on any kind of screen.
No.
Like, no matter what kind of video I send you, no matter what kind of details, I guarantee you, like, you have to see that the piece in person won't change. But aside from gallery openings are good points to, like, not only for collectors to meet artists, but it's also a good networking time for other artists to meet other artists. And,
exactly.
You know, it's still a social thing. Like, it is, as much as people know the stereotype of, like, oh, it's just wine and chat. And, like, it kind of is, but it's necessary. This is our gathering. These are our work meetings with all of our peers and the people in our community.
Well put. Exactly.
I think it will come back again, but there's different ideas of how to do that. I think big mega fairs are not going to be happening anytime soon, at least not until either a vaccine or there's, like, some really strong structures and, like, for lack of better words, like, policing happening.
Yeah.
To make it work, because even that, it's like at the very bottom of the list is even, like, things like sports gatherings and, like, you know, movie theaters are never going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the best laid plans of the ideal situation of these things opening, I mean, like you said, it's like it's just kind of off the books for 2020 and a big question mark for 2021. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how this all keeps developing and, again, how the pivot changes and how artists, you know, obviously continue to stay a foot ahead of the game. And, you know, I think truly, if anything, it's time to lean heavily on the internet, on social media presence. I mean, that's been the beauty of, honestly, all of quarantine is, like, I mean, can you imagine being back in 1918? I mean, you were it was literally you, a book, and, like, your family for, like, 6 or 7 months. I mean, now, I mean, look at here. We have the caveat. I can look at you. We can talk. We're all connected still. So it's just, like, I think the industry has to lean heavily on that side and just find new technologies and new ways to connect people and to connect their artwork to the public, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Without it being too gimmicky, because I think that was, like, the big wave that came through when it all first started was this, like, pop-up situation of, like, virtual galleries and things like that. And I'm like,
right.
Unless you're trying to throw in some fancy AR, which I have seen some galleries play with.
Really?
Things like that. I mean, I know artists that are already working on that before this happened, so I feel like that is some, like, distant future, or, like, maybe soon future, but within a couple years of being like, okay, let me get this app and I can just see the work here in my room or something like that.
We're not too far off from that. Yeah,
no,
I think
that
the tech
if somebody
is getting
has,
there.
Like, the money to throw behind that, it will happen.
Right.
But there's also the idea of, like, we were even talking about it with my old director before the gallery closed about how we might do it. And having it more, not so much like an opening night, but maybe an opening weekend. So essentially
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, so we have, like, the hours, our full hours are, like, from 11 a.m. to, like, 9 p.m. or something. And essentially you, like, register for time slots to come in. And then it could be, like, so then you can also, like, monitor, right? Only the, for example, our space was big. So it'd be, like, okay, only these, like, 10 to 15 slots are open. So you can, like, log in. And then this is your, like, hour to be there or something. Hmm. And we can still have, like, the wine out and still have things like that. And so there's still time for people to come through, maybe some interactions, you know, depending on who's there, but that's just it. Like, you don't know who's on what time unless you plan it.
Yeah, and I think that's the approach that a lot of these bigger event venues are taking, you know, even all the way down to, like, the theme parks. You know, I hear Disney's going to do virtual queues, and it's just about truly limiting the amount of people that can be in a given area at a certain time. And that's just, that's a no-brainer. That's, I guess, safety. But, you know, the real variable is human beings. It's us. It's people.
Yeah.
And obviously what I've been seeing is the divided line of people that actually want to participate in that movement and people that don't, basically.
Like, I understand the narrative of how this is and this whole, like, we're Americans, therefore we're free to do what we want.
Right.
And I get that.
Right.
To a point. But also it's just, you know, as I've been saying, is that, you know, the masks are just, if all you have to do is wear a piece of cloth over your nose and mouth while you're in a small, tight, spaced area or inside of a business, like, I think that's such a minor thing to do. Like, that's not something, like, not, that's not a hill to die on. literally. Like, literally, yeah, it's not a hill to die on. But then it's like, you know, and I understand there's so much misinformation. Like, what was it? The WHO just said something about, like, asymptomatic people might not actually be giving people things. So it's like, wait, what? What have you been telling us? And then I'm very upset that they told us in the beginning not to wear masks.
Yeah.
In the beginning, they were saying, like, unless you're a medical professional, you don't need to wear a mask. And I'm just like, this could have been shorter if you told us, like, literally before we even locked this down.
It's just been such a disaster with misinformation from the start of this thing.
Exactly. And
it's just, and
even
until
now,
been
no one knows
a rocky road. And I think that's the problem, is that, you know, we definitely live in a time where, like, people can choose the news they want to listen to. They can read the facts they want to read, and they can truly believe whatever they want. And
yeah,
it's sad to see a time when, like, data and science, when it's so crucial, be just completely buried by so much other fodder that people can click on and watch. And it's truly almost a sense of brainwashing with some people, you know. And, and like I said, I mean, I'm down here in the South, you know, I find there's times when I'm out wearing a mask in a public place and I even get a look from somebody that I feel like they're possibly judging me that I chose to actually do a courteous thing and wear a mask in a public place, you know. It's
and
just,
I think,
whack.
Yeah, but then even on the other side here, where I like to, like, I think New York settled in very well.
Yeah.
When we first started quarantine, there was, like, a lot of push and pull, and there was, even I was getting upset with my own neighbors kind of situation, where it's just like, why can't you just, like, keep your distance and or do certain things or wear your mask fucking properly? But then it was also things like, here we are now, you know, 3 months into it, and one of the first, like, really nice weekends. I mean, nothing's open still, but
right,
it's like one of the first really nice weekends outside, and I walked through my neighborhood and it's pretty much business as usual, but all in masks.
Okay. Well, that's a good feeling, at least.
And there's a lot of people out there, you know, and it's being aware of what's happening. But then suddenly, as of, like, the last couple weeks, that's all changed again. I don't know, like, what happened, or I think everyone's just sick of it now, but you can't just be sick of a virus, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, there's no wishing it away. There's no being tired of it, and then it goes away. It's just, it's the true burden of just riding this thing out until it's 100% officially gone. So, you know, I guess we can just hope. I mean, I try to think that, I guess I try not to be super positive or not toe the line of being super pessimistic. So I just try to stay, like, in the gray area of things nowadays. But that's pretty much it. Well, look, thank you for talking to me. I do want to wrap this up. I've been asking everybody. So what is the one thing you miss the most about your old life? And what is that? Is that the same thing that when this thing is all over, you're just going to run out your door and do?
I mean, I don't think I'm going to be able to right away. I mean, it's two things. It's honestly, like, I do want to travel. Like, I just miss going places, like, anywhere, honestly. But also just something simple, like going to a gallery show or going to a museum or walking, like, window shopping or, like, browsing. Like, that's the thing, is I don't even want to buy anything. I just want to be able to walk through a store, pick things up and put them down and walk out.
Amen.
Like, that isn't the grocery store. That is, like, I just want to go to, like, a fast fashion store and be like, look at these sweaters that, you know, don't fit me. Okay, great. You know, anything.
Yeah, I feel like we're all going to have some element of shell shock when it comes to grocery shopping post COVID-19. But I agree. I think just the tangible aspect of touching things and not having that after worry.
Yeah,
of,
or,
like,
just, you know, like, being things at my own space or my own speed, or even just, like, you know, I want to just go to the store myself and not have to order something online. I want to, like, look at things, or if I want something right now, I don't have to be like, is that place open? Is this place even exist anymore? You know, like, I need art supplies and I'm just like, I don't really want to order them from, like, this place and it's going to take weeks to get here.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Perfect. Well, hey, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was great catching up, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
See ya.
Thank you for your call.
All right. Yeah, great interview with Danya. Thanks again for giving that time and talking to me, especially about her experience up there in New York. I did think it was crazy that she did actually have COVID-19. She came to find out she had it.
That's nuts. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. And apparently she didn't either until she took the antibodies test and found out.
So it was an antibodies test, not a positive, like, up-the-nose swab.
No, she didn't do the up-the-nose swab. It was just, I guess, the antibodies blood work test that she had done at her physician's office.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not disparaging her and her doctor by any means, but I thought that the last I heard was that the antibodies tests weren't super accurate, that they couldn't tell you much about yourself, but they could tell you about a population somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but I guess it kind of helped her connect the dots, because obviously she had really felt under the weather kind of at the beginning of the ramp up in New York. So everything kind of correlated to her actually finding out that she had the antibodies.
It added up. Yeah. Well, and two, now I'm hearing that antibodies, I mean, you never know until they have actually finished doing the tests and they tell us for sure. But I have heard some speculation. I think it was even Fauci who said that antibodies may only help you for like a matter of months.
Jesus.
So like you've had it and you maybe, according to him, maybe potentially could have it again in a few months.
God.
It's nuts.
You know, that truly is kind of the scary thing about COVID-19 is even though we've kind of been in this world with it now for quite a few months, there's still so many more question marks. There's still way more questions than there are answers about it. And as every day goes by, we're discovering something new and learning that maybe even things we knew before aren't even true.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. We've been rolling through so many TV shows because we have all this time together and we've been doing them all. So recently, you and I just got back to watching The Walking Dead. And I honestly see so many parallels between that show and my life right now that it's weird. Now, of course, nothing has gotten as bad as The Walking Dead, but
yet.
It's about like, and I guess that's the good thing about this virus is it's not as deadly as like a zombie disease, but you know, it
yet.
Is as confusing and like, you know, in that show they have to learn how it works. Of course, that's in earlier seasons, but they refer to it in an episode we just watched and I was like, yeah, damn, they know a lot about this thing just by watching people live and die with it.
Yeah.
And they've figured a lot of things out about it. I almost feel like they know more about that disease than I know about this one.
You know, and it's weird with a show like that. One of the interesting parallels is that the humans are actually scarier than the flesh-eating zombies. And what we start to see, too, with kind of the crazy cabin fever aspect that starts to overtake people in our own country, is you could really see that if, like, this thing stayed the way it did for 2-3 more years straight, how people really could start to turn, start to kind of get into groups, start to become nomads. And then that idea of just like, take what's yours, you know, and then there you go. Now you have like, it's basically the wild fucking west.
I mean, I don't know about this disease that just makes you have like a really bad, maybe deadly flu. But I don't know. I see what you're saying, though.
Desperation,
know.
You know, like
for sure.
When people are desperate, you know, they can resort to violence. They can resort to things that are extreme. I mean, and then you get a whole bunch of people that are desperate, especially right now in kind of the financial terms of our country. It's not a good situation.
Yeah. The part I connected with, too, was how, and again, we're on the most recent season of this, so we've watched a lot of it and none of this is new to me, but I am watching it a little bit with new eyes with COVID going on right now. And so the thing that really connected with me last night watching an episode was how, you know, everybody's trying to move on with their lives. Everybody's trying to make things normal. They've got these communities and they're just trying to get back to normal. And I'm like, man, I know what that feels like.
Yeah, it's true.
Different scale, of course, like the world's not totally gone, but just that idea that like all you want is to feel like comfortable and normal and like you're
again,
living your life.
It's true. And it's just like the weird slow tiptoeing back into normality that's going to start happening for people. It's going to be weird. It's going to be a weird shock for people that have just been sitting around for months and haven't worked. I mean, I can't fathom the first day I have to go back into my office and work. I mean, it's going to feel strange.
Dude, I started a project a week ago. It was supposed to only be 2 weeks long. Now it's looking like it's going to be 3 and 4 weeks long. So I'm in the middle of it right now, really kind of the beginning. And I am not loving working again. I really wish I was retired in that, you know, have that kind of financial security to be like, fuck this. I don't need this fucking work. But that's not the case. So yeah, I am totally overwhelmed with like responsibilities again. Like I can't just like clean my oven. I have to do things. And then on top of that, I won't talk much about it. I want to give anything away or whatever, but I am working. I do mostly like commercials type things. And the one I'm working on, we're trying to do what we normally do in a COVID situation. So now instead of gathering together and going to shoot on sets, we're attempting to do all these things from home.
Man.
And it is fucking weird. And it's not really, I don't think, working very well. It is not awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely an unorthodox approach to doing what, you know, we typically do in the film and TV industry, is you just put it in the hands of professionals. And now when you put it in the hands of somebody that's not, that's literally just the consumer with their own cell phone and technology. I can't imagine the hurdles.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hadn't really gone into that, but yeah, what you're describing is that I'm doing testimonials essentially with folks from home doing their own cameras and stuff. I really wasn't trying to get into all that. Thanks, Tom. But
I didn't sign an NDA.
You probably should have, but it's not awesome. It's like everything's pulling teeth because it's just not something that anybody's used to. And just, you know, that's where I would leave it. And it's not just these folks with their cameras at home, those poor people. It's the whole system that is being built basically from the ground up right now. And everybody trying to communicate with each other from, you know, the people in the office, the people in the company, the production company, trying to talk to each other and trying to make things work from afar. And it is just not awesome. I mean, I love working from home, but I guess I'm coming to realize that the reason I love working from home is I'm generally independent on projects. I like working alone, I think, is what it is. And so now I'm working with a bunch of people and everybody's involved and nobody knows what the fuck is going on, and I am over it.
And it's like a lot of people are also working remotely, and a lot of people have also just been stuck in their houses. So this one new kind of freedom of getting creative again and being a team and being part of something, it's almost like everybody's got to be the one raising their hands and, you know, being kind of top of the class mentality. That's got to be tough too.
Well, I don't know about all that, but I have noticed, like, you know, in a typical office when you're not working from home, and again, it used to be different for me. I worked alone, so nobody was... I just kind of did my own thing, and that's great. But in this situation where I would normally have been in an office with people, you can't just run into each other in the hallway and bitch about something. And I'm certainly not going to do it on some kind of a Zoom call, or I'm not going to text somebody some shit talking because my parents are both lawyers. I learned a long time ago, don't put things in writing. I'm not going to talk bad about something or some situation or somebody in text message. So you just lack those opportunities to just like run into somebody, shoot the shit, maybe bitch about something, laugh a little and move on.
Old water cooler talk.
Right. You miss that opportunity. And that's kind of a big part of office life. These Zoom calls, you can't even have like side conversations. The main person talking is the one everybody has to listen to.
It's tough.
You can't sort of turn to the guy next to you and be like, wait, did you understand that? Is that what he meant? There's none of that.
It's hard, you know, and I guess even taking it out of a business sense, like the idea of using Zoom as well, is it's like the novelty and how it's worked nowadays in the culture has been, you know, a great advancement. However, you know, we had like a family Zoom call this past weekend for Father's Day. And even with that, it's just like there's something about when you're sitting around a bunch of people in a circle and you're talking and you can kind of feel the ebb and flow. I can't tell you how many times you're stepping on people when you're talking.
Yeah.
It's actually become a huge frustration when there's like more than like four people in a Zoom call, because it's like you step on somebody and then obviously it's like, oh, wait, no, you go, I go. It's really tedious.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And I think it's the same situation there where you can't just turn to the person next to you and make an inside joke and then go back to the main conversation. There is none of that.
Just some of the things we long here in quarantine. Well, let's hope that maybe in the not too far future, we could all step outside of our bubbles again and not feel afraid to be within 6 feet of each other.
Yeah, don't hope for it. It's too far away. Don't get my hopes up. It's not happening. Just let it go.
Optimistic?
No.
Pessimistic?
No optimism. It hurts more.
Well, as you can already tell who the optimistic and pessimistic one is on this show.
Yeah, but who keeps getting crushed by things not going back to normal?
Oh, it's fun. I like getting crushed. I think I got to at least get crushed once a week, and it's good for my soul.
I'm just saying, isn't maybe my way of looking at things is actually more positive because I'm not hurt by this as much
probably,
as you seem to be.
Probably.
Just let it go.
I guess I'll live and learn. God knows I'll have several months of more learning to do here in quarantine.
12 to 18.
Okay, Dr. Fauci.
All right.
All right. Well, we've pretty much exhausted ourselves talking here on the show. Thanks for tuning in. Again, we're trying to do these every week, every other week. I'm trying to line up new interviews. If you're interested in doing an interview, let me know. I'll call you up. We'll chit chat, see what you're doing on your side of the world. I hope everybody is staying safe, staying healthy, staying sane, most of all. Again, thanks Ono Radio Show for having us on your network, all the listeners that do tune in and listen to this. Again, hope you're all well. As we do on the show, we always go out to another COVID-style tune. I believe this one is Old Corona Road, and I'm pretty sure you can figure out what this is supposed to be a parody of. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Coronavirus. Yeah, I'm gonna take my mask to the grocery store. Gonna social distance till I can't no more. Gonna take my mask to the grocery store. Gonna social distance till I can't no more. I got the Lysol in the back, Clorox wipes attached, N95 mask, got the gloves, it's black to match. Going to the grocery, huh, eating too much food. Been pacing in the kitchen, you ain't been up off that couch now. I just wanna go outside, still wanna go outside. I just wanna go outside, still wanna go outside. Talking to my hamster, going a little crazy. Hamster is my baby, you can go and ask her. My life in pandemic, watch too many movies. Running out of TP, rashes on my booty. I just wanna go outside, still wanna go outside. I just wanna go outside, still wanna go outside. Yeah, I'm gonna take my mask to the grocery store. Gonna social distance till I can't no more. Gonna take my mask to the grocery store. Gonna social distance.